It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? An unfortunate story from Florida involving sex on a playground. At 1:30, as Texas baseball gets ready to host a Super Regional, we have to ask for you for your favorite crowd experiences in sports and beyond. And in mere minutes, it's the midday movie review of Running Scared. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two. Before we jump into those two crazy Chicago cops, a couple things to hit here. Yesterday, we talked about that expanded CFP playoff idea. There's more, a little bit more development into this story. Heather Dinich of ESPN has a story out today about what may be proposed. Next week, a proposal could be on the board for a 12-team expanded playoff. Trey, the more details I hear about it, the more I can feel them covering all their bases. That, well, what if this kind of team would get mad? What if this kind of team would get mad? What if this kind of conference would get mad? Feels like they're covering a lot of ideas here. So we'll get into that, but they are going to expand. They're thinking of expanding to 12. Right now, it looks like there's a three-page proposal on the board, if you will, that does call for a field of 12 that would include six conference champions and six at-large bids. We'll get into some more of the specifics of that as we go along. Also, as Trey mentioned, we're going to talk about your favorite crowd experiences today. As I've been watching basketball, as I've been watching baseball, especially the college baseball from the regionals, and thinking about the Dish this weekend. Packed. It's sold out, in case you haven't heard. Saturday morning at 11, they may have a couple straggler tickets available at the window. So if you want to get over there, you can check it out. But it's going to be packed. And those baseball environments are awesome. I love the extra emotion that college baseball has versus pro baseball right now. I love a pitcher getting a big strikeout and screaming his head off, pointing at his dugout, you know, even kind of staring down the guy. I don't care. Give me some emotion. So it got me thinking and got us thinking about your favorite crowd experiences, because that's about to come back, Trey, for a lot of people. There are some Texas baseball fans that'll go and hang at the Dish. They haven't done that in a while. There are people that are going to go to concerts, and they haven't done that in a while. The biker folks are heading out to COTA to Rot Rally. They didn't get to do Rot Rally last year. They didn't get to go hang with their biker, with the motorcycle community and all whatever that means for them. There's a lot of people that haven't been able to get in those crowds. We've almost been trained to fear crowds for the last year or so. And maybe for some reasons, there was a reason to for a little bit. But now as we get back to normal, we got to embrace those crowds again. So I want to hear about everybody's favorite crowd experiences, because I'm loving the return of the crowds on my TV right now.
Do you have the obvious number one from music?
My overall is the moment the lights go down before the main act at a concert.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite things in life. It's that moment of they're about to be on stage.
Everybody quiets down.
Oh, my God. It's one of the greatest. It's just one of my favorite moments ever. It always gives me chills. And then different bands will construct it different ways. The lead-in song, that's great. And the lights are flashing and all that stuff. But as far as specific acts, one of the last ones that connects with me, for some reason, two different shows, but in the last wave of concerts I had, I saw the Dixie Chicks. At that point, they were still the Dixie Chicks. Now they're the Chicks. And I saw Duran Duran. And both of them paid tribute to Prince after he died.
Mm.
And I just remember the emotion in the crowd. They threw purple lights up. They threw the symbol up in one case. They each told a story about Prince before the song. And then they ended up playing, I can't remember if they each played their own song for Prince or if they played a Prince song. I can't remember how that part of it. But the emotion in that crowd was, you could feel it. It was awesome. People were, you know, doing what you and I always say we don't understand, videoing everything. But they wanted to capture it because it was important to them. And out at COTA, they put the whole tower purple for Prince. Those are the kind of moments I love in a crowd, because it just feels like everybody's sort of, you know, everybody's pulling the same way.
Yeah.
And the band can create that moment. So that's what I ultimately think of. What about you?
I'll tell you at 1:30. We're already pretty deep into this segment.
All right.
So let's go ahead and get to the midday movie review One of your favorites from the 80s. I think Wendy is a big fan.
She is a big fan.
I know Cooter is a big fan because that's what really got this conversation going. It is the 1984-86 film Running Scared, starring Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal. And I guess the latter was not very well known at the time. This was pre-Billy Crystal breakout.
Yeah, that's true. This is the movie that made me really dig Billy Crystal along with Saturday Night Live. The run and the stuff he did on Saturday Night Live.
That's
and then
true.
This was how I got to
know
him.
I guess he
him.
Didn't have the box office appeal up until this
didn't,
point.
You're right. Hadn't, you know, City Slickers and some of that other stuff had not happened yet. When Harry Met Sally, I don't think it happened yet. And so, yeah, this would have been before that. I've always loved this movie. It's the year I turned 12. It had swearing. It had cops, a little bit of nudity. It was just all the right levels of things for a 12, 13-year-old kid. It does feel a little dated to me now. I'm interested to see what you thought of it since you had never seen it. But, yeah, it's one of those that I always go back to because it's unexpected. Like, the casting makes no sense. Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal as cops. Doesn't make any sense on its face, but something about their chemistry worked in the movie for me. I can still watch it to this day, and I'm still entertained.
Yeah, this movie was dated for me. I'm not even going to bury the lead here. I had a hard time with it. It's very formulaic in terms of the buddy cop thing and just the hijinks that they get into. It's got a lot of overacting, which I think is a staple of 1980s movies. Especially this genre, and Joey Pants is maybe the most glaring example of this. He plays the delinquent that they catch up with and arrest and kind of keep in contact with throughout the movie.
Right.
And unfortunately, there were just not enough of those moments, you know, trying to cut through all of that, that I found humorous enough to ultimately like this film.
So the interesting part, the only part of it that you might find interesting, because I figured that might be your reaction, is what people went on to become. This movie, not for the two main guys, but a lot of other guys in the movie. So Joe Pantoliano, who you just mentioned, ironically becomes the captain in the Bad Boys movies.
Yes, he does. He was also in Sopranos, obviously.
This is a young Jimmy Smits.
Yeah.
As the villain, Julio Gonzalez, and he obviously goes on to be Jimmy Smits.
Mm-hmm.
But two other interesting ones that I didn't know this. So the two cops that first are undercover, spoiler alert, and then later on they have to train.
Yeah, the one guy was in Real Genius and a couple of other things.
Is that, that's Jonathan Grease or is that Stephen Bauer?
I don't know. He's the guy who had the longer hair, I believe.
So that'd be Bauer, I think. So Stephen Bauer is Frank Sigliano in this movie, but he was in Scarface, and he was also in Breaking Bad. And I didn't recognize him.
Wait a second. What was the name?
He's Stephen Bauer. He is like a drug lord in Breaking Bad, and he's also, shock, involved in drugs in Scarface. But I never recognized him. He looks so much older in those roles to me.
Oh, that's interesting.
But Scarface would have been before this. Scarface is before 86.
Well, Scarface, he played Tony Montana's brother, correct? Or he played his right-hand man.
Yes, I think that's right.
Who ends
right.
up hooking up with Tony Montana's sister mm-hmm. and gets killed as a result.
Correct.
So yep. That's not the guy that I'm thinking of. It must be the other one who plays the genius and real genius that they're trying to get to.
Okay.
Who lives underground or whatever. And then he played roles in other films too.
So the other guy on that.
And actually Stephen Bauer was in that movie. Who was the actress that we spoke with during South by Southwest? She's just an absolute smoke show. She was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He played the dad in that movie.
Oh, right. Yes, exactly. Itzo. Was her last name, right?
Yep, Lorenza Itzo.
Yes, you're right. I forgot that he was in that. Yeah, Bauer was. That's right. We asked her about Stephen Bauer, and I didn't realize he was in Running Scared. And then Jonathan Grease, the other guy you're talking about, who plays that other cop, he's Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes, he is. You're right about that.
I never realized that part. So there's some other. Captain is Dan Hedaya, who did some stuff in the 80s, was on Cheers, and was on a couple other shows as well. So the cast is really interesting. Ends up kind of being a foundational cast. But, this is one of those movies where I think somebody says Uncle Rico is that guy from Real Genius. We're getting a lot of Uncle Rico text in there. Like you said, there's an 80s sort of formula cop movie thing to this, but I liked it because it was, it didn't seem to, I was reading that like Gregory Hines liked the fact that it was a black cop and a white cop as a duo, but the black cop got the sex scenes. He was excited. He was kind of excited about that part of it.
That's funny.
So yeah, I enjoyed it. I always end up laughing, and the back and forth between the two is great. But when you just look at this as a movie on its face, when you just try to deconstruct it and put it back together and all whatever it was, and I rewatched it twice just to make sure, I could definitely see how someone would just not, it would not hit them right. If you, it's a timing kind of thing. If you didn't see it in 1986. And you're, you know, it's just, it's a very different kind of thing because it does, it is a little flimsy in some of its storytelling.
And I don't want to totally bury this movie. I would like to bring up some of the things that I really liked. And it does start with how many great on-site shots they filmed in and around Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously had the montage of all the different spots downtown at the beginning. I mean, you could tell immediately where this was being filmed, which obviously perks my ears up when it's showing a pretty specific shot along the Chicago River where you can see, I want to say it was the Wrigley Building, and there was something else there in that moment, too.
Yeah, and that's what you could appreciate, because apparently the director at the time, the story was like nobody went to Chicago to film these movies.
No, I mean, that was when downtown was still really rough. Wicker Park was just a haven for drug addicts and prostitution, and then, you know, 20 years later, it is all of a sudden a hipster paradise. I also really liked the montage, and it doesn't get any more 80s than not only a montage, but a montage that includes people roller skating for physical activity's sake.
Man! Plus, if you know Gregory Hines was a professional dancer.
Yes, he was.
You know he's easily the best roller skater in that scene. He probably taught Billy Crystal how to do it.
No question, and Billy Crystal, I got to tell you, this is the first red flag for me when they had Billy Crystal, and I realized he was jumping in on pickup basketball game. They had him trying to play basketball, and it was ugly. And fortunately, they had him miss a shot pretty soon after that. But it was like, oh my goodness, Billy Crystal is clearly an actor and not an athlete.
He was a decent roller skater. Yeah.
Okay, roller skater.
He didn't fall down. I mean, that's kind of all you needed for that scene.
Wonder how many takes that took.
The Michael McDonald song kind of makes this whole movie in a way. If it's not in the middle of the movie, I'm not sure what you get out of it. But that Key West montage is great with them, the girls, the fishing. First he jumps, and then he jumps, and then just that whole thing. Gregory Hines was always so funny to me. He's like those big eyes of his, like his eyes always seem to bug out of his head.
Yeah.
But he's a better physical comedian, I think, than people gave him credit for. And just their back and forth is what sort of, you know, carried that movie for me. But I think what a ton of people remember for that movie is probably that song Sweet Freedom. And Michael McDonald got like a, I want to say it was like a top 10, top 15 hit.
Good for him.
That thing was a monster in 86, 87.
This film really liked to utilize the really bad fake punch sound effect with an equally bad stunt being pulled off of one guy punching the other. And I'm guessing that's probably because they were having the actors doing the punching. It didn't look like they had stunt people in those scenes, but they weren't coming anywhere close to connecting. And it was that very video game sounding punch sound too.
Wow. Okay. Never even noticed that about the movie. But again,
it was funny. And it happened a couple of times early. And I want to say it happened one time later on in the film. It's like, all right, guys.
That's so funny how much we forgive a movie when we're 12.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
And that is why I'm not going to just crush this with my final grade. It's because I recognize that this film had its time and place. We're just so far beyond that now. It was like when Wags and BK asked me to watch Dude, Where's My Car?
Right.
A couple years ago for the very first time.
You weren't going to think that was The Godfather?
I'm not a teenager.
No.
I may have been stoned when I was watching it, but I'm not a stoned teenager watching this for the first time.
You weren't that stoned.
So there's no way in hell that I'm going to be able to appreciate this movie like you guys did as teenagers.
Yeah, that's fair. By the way, did you happen to see the Rotten Tomatoes score on this movie?
No, what was it?
I was shocked at how low it was. I understand this movie is not like an all-time legendary movie, but it's special to me. But 57%? Damn. Like not even just kind of failing, like really failing. Like they considered it a failure, 57%. I was a little sad about that.
When you consider that it's a lot of generations younger than ours that are giving grades on Rotten Tomatoes, that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess so. You're right. They're not going to look back at it the same way. All right, so we always do favorite scenes. Even though you didn't like the movie, what was your favorite scene of Running Scared? Is it the Key West montage?
Key West montage is good. My favorite scene, though, the first scene that made me laugh was the scene in the police station where the guy comes in looking for, I think it's the Billy Crystal character. Yeah. And then he's like, hey, buy me some time with this guy. And so he points him to where Gregory Hines had just gone into, and he went into the women's bathroom. So the guy comes back. He's like, I didn't see him in the men's bathroom. He's like, check the women's.
Yeah.
So he went back in there, bust in, and I forget the line that he said, but that was amusing. I really enjoyed that moment.
My favorite scene in Running Scared has always been the car scene where Billy Crystal makes the call and mm-hmm. does the funny voice, because we've showed it to my daughter now. So my daughter and I just randomly will say, you know, gotta go, Final Jeopardy on. Like, we always sort of re-hit those lines. So that scene in Julio's car with the big block 80s phone that used to, you know, because that was the cool thing to have that in your car if you had a badass, you know, Mercedes mm-hmm. back then. That's my favorite scene of the movie when he makes that call.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I think that's maybe part of the issue for me with this movie that I didn't realize until right now. I'm just not the biggest Billy Crystal fan.
Ah, well, like, that's got to help. I mean,
he doesn't strike the right comedic tone for me. And in this movie, I enjoyed the Hines character more than I did the Crystal character.
See, and that's where I like both of them. That would make a lot of sense if you don't like the movie. And if you're not into Billy Crystal, yeah, it's going to be tough. Because you got to dig those two guys interacting. If you only like one of them, it's going to be tougher. All right, so it was my pick. I'll throw my grade out. I am not giving it 57%. I'm going higher than that, and yes, this is my heart talking, but I'm going to crawl it into the A category with a 9.1. That's probably too high. I get it, but it's mine. I love it. The rewatchability, the requotability, and because, well, rest in peace, Gregory Hines. 9.1, Trey.
Yeah, he died way too early.
He did. I hated that he died.
Considering how great a shape he was in.
I love that man. One of my favorite actors of all time, and I hated it when he died. So I'm giving it a 9.1.
All right, so I said I'm not going to kill this movie with my final grades.
All right.
So with that in mind, I'm going with a solid 3.
Oh, come on, man. A 3? What'd you give Napoleon Dynamite?
A 5.
No.
Yeah.
Come on, Trey. I'm not asking you to love it. I'm not asking you to rewatch it. You're telling me you thought Napoleon Dynamite was a better movie than this?
I disliked this movie more than I disliked Napoleon Dynamite, Chad.
Oh, that hurts. That's painful. And Uncle Rico was in both of them, and he was so much better as Tony Montoya.
That's true. Now, see,
is that
I
his
like,
name? Tony?
I yes, liked
Tony
him.
Montoya.
I liked him. You know, that's good that you say that, because I liked him more than Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, my God. That hurts.
Neither movie did I find all that funny, but Napoleon Dynamite, I laughed harder at the one or two times that I laughed.
A 3. A 3. I can't believe I asked that. I should have left that alone. I really should have, because it made it worse. I asked the follow-up, and it made it worse.
All right, I'm bumping it up to a 5. It gets Napoleon Dynamite treatment.
Now it's tied with Napoleon Dynamite.
All right, 5.7. I'm giving it the Rotten Tomatoes score.
Come on! That's good. I'm glad I talked you into that one. I'd be a terrible lawyer, but at least I got that one done. All right, there's our movie review of Running Scared. It might be the last time Trey lets me pick a movie in this whole run. Next week, we'll be off on the movie review since I'm on vacation, and then the following week, we'll probably crank it back up. And there's no telling what Trey's going to make me watch now. All right, coming up, how about some NFL preseason schedules are out there, but we've also got the college football update on the playoff, and we're asking you for your favorite crowd moments. There should be some big ones at the Dish over the weekend, but what are your favorite crowd experiences you're looking to get back to? Maybe it's your favorite concerts, maybe it's sports. What are those best moments you've had in a crowd? 337-3776 is the Specs text line. This is The Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
No kidding, you know who's right.
hanging out with you too long. I actually recognize this one. Tell me who this is.
Yeah. That's funny. I don't remember playing this one for
really?
A while. This is Deer Tick, but it has a very, the song has a very distinct sound to it.
Really
this is
does.
Deer Tick is the name of the band. The song is called Baltimore Blues Number 1.
Okay. Deer Tick, a part of the list today. Trey started with the idea of Heartless Bastards. Played a song from them, and this is a playlist off of the Heartless Bastards vibe. We've had some White Denim, and now Deer Tick. More of that coming up on the show today. We've got a few different stories out there. Of course, if you're a Longhorn fan, we gave you the good news earlier about a basketball recruit that is in town. I see multiple recruits coming to town right now, but Anthony Black, among other guys that are coming to town, the 6'6 guard out of Coppell, a 4-star, is in town for an official visit. So we'll hope that goes well through the next day or so. And also, we talked about Garrett Cole striking out Josh Donaldson a couple times last night and staring him down, this horrifically awful Bo Schembechler story and update, if you will, that we will get back to. But we also have some updates in football, got a college football update. The NFL will give us a little bit of an update. But we're also talking about your favorite crowd moments today. Could be sports, it could be a concert, it could be whatever you're just kind of whatever you think of. Somebody said best crowd experience, Posse East, watching Landon Donovan score last second game winner versus Algeria in 2010 World Cup.
Was fun.
That had to be a good pop. If you're in the right place, that has to be great.
I'm trying to think of where I was. I was in Chi-Town, I believe, watching that game. I still remember, I still remember the crowd because we were at a bar watching it. I still remember the crowd going crazy.
There's just something about those little moments in a crowd. I'll give you one from sports. I'll always remember 2015, my dad and I are in a restaurant across from Jerry World. We watch American Pharoah win the Triple Crown, and then we went and watched the Stones at Jerry World.
Mm.
And that room was awesome because everybody was rooting for that one horse.
Mm.
Who cared about the other? I mean, I guess if you're a better and you're off in the corner, oh, please lose, whatever. But we wanted the Triple Crown. So, like, there was just something. That's what I love about these. This is the crowd thing. It's like everybody's pulling the same way, whether it's Longhorn baseball fans showing up or especially a concert when you have no clue what the person next to you, hopefully you don't know. You don't know how they voted. You don't know what their political bent is. All you know is that they love blank, whatever you're there to see.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that when Billy Joel or, you know, Smash Mouth or Gwar or Slipknot or whoever you're seeing or Stevie Nicks, when they say, I'm about to play the hit and everybody flips out that pop, that's what I miss. That's what I can't wait to get back when I finally get to go back to a concert.
That's a lot of fun. Or they start to play those first couple of notes.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can recognize the song.
Yep.
People start going ape. Yeah, I've got some fond music moments. Weirdly, and perhaps this helps people understand why they were such a big part of my childhood and early adulthood and why I still hold them so dear, a lot of it boils down to the Toadies and seeing the Toadies in concert. Like, they played the very last show at the original Liberty Lunch, and I was front center for that show.
Mm.
And it was incredible. And I know they've gotten back together now, but they did a farewell tour when their original bassist, Lisa, was leaving the band. And I think they did actually break up for, I want to say, 3 or 4 years.
Mm.
They performed at Stubbs at Waller Creek. And right when they went on stage, and again, I was front center for this one, but right when they went on stage, it just started raining. And it rained, I want to say, like halfway through the very first song, and it was clear for the rest of the time. Mm. That was just a very poetic moment for me.
Weather can be a part of it, too.
Sports-wise, it's definitely a lot of Texas football, and there are a few other things that are in there as well. But Texas football, you've got a number of Oklahoma games. The most recent one would have been Charlie's one win over Oklahoma, where I think Texas was like double-digit dogs.
Right.
I forget if it was Jerod Hurd or Tyrone Swoops who was the starting quarterback that day. I don't even remember the specifics of the game, other than I've never sat with the UT crowd, which is where I've sat all 30 or so times that I've been to that game, and seen the crowd so loose. They may have been a little bit lubed up as well. And I want to say it was like an 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock kickoff. And they just didn't have a care in the world. And when UT actually had some things happen good for them early on, that crowd went crazy. They were just trying to enjoy that moment, understanding there would likely be a point in the second half where they would be leaving before that final gun sounded. And the final gun did sound on the Sooners. And we got to pull our car keys out that day and shake them at the Sooner faithful as they were leaving the Cotton Bowl with maybe 5-6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. That was awesome. The Notre Dame win in Austin, even though both teams ended up sucking that year, that was a lot of fun.
That pop at the end of that one had to be awesome. I wasn't in the house at that point, but man, it on TV, it sounded incredible.
That's the most memorable moment I have standing next to my granddad watching a game, because
really?
He was in the stands for that game, and the joy on his face was great when Swoops went in for that touchdown. And the Ricky run is another one of those moments in DKR.
I was going to ask you about that moment. I was in the house for that moment, and that one had to be special because you didn't know you'd get that kind of reaction.
Yeah.
Because he had a couple yards to go, but then it was very clear that he'd gotten the record. But then it was like, wait, not just the record, but a touchdown, which really was important in that game because it was a close game. Like, that's a huge pop.
Did it in the perfect fashion. I was in the crowd for the Westbrook hit versus Notre Dame, even though we lost that game.
That's a good one.
But this may be the fondest crowd that I've ever been a part of to watch a sporting event. It was a high school basketball game, of all things. It was my senior year in high school. Newman Smith was playing Dallas Carter. We at Newman Smith had Glendon Alexander, who was in the process of breaking the, at the time, it was the highest level of high school basketball in Texas, the 5A scoring record. And Dallas Carter had a couple of dudes who ended up committing and playing for Texas. The point guard, Anthony Good, and their post player, whose name is escaping me right now, but the game went 3 overtimes. It was a packed gym.
Wow.
Everybody stayed the entire time, and Newman Smith ended up coming out victorious against, I think they were a nationally ranked Dallas Carter team at the time as well. And the game finished like somewhere around 100 for each team. So it was like 97-99 or something, or 99-97. Newman Smith ends up winning that game. Still the most bonkers I've ever seen a crowd, and probably part of it is the fact that there were only 1,000 people jammed into that gymnasium, and Nolan Richardson was in the crowd watching Glendon because Glendon had already committed to him, and it was just a very festive environment and one of those moments that even though it was more than 20 years ago, almost 25 years ago at this point, I will always think fondly of.
That is awesome. One of our listeners says, Game 5 of the World Series, Astros-Dodgers, awesome experience. That whole World Series was nuts. I can't imagine being at one of those games. Somebody says, Slayer at the Austin Music Hall during the Rain in Blood front-to-back tour.
Okay.
I've heard people talk about Slayer at Austin Music Hall before. That's not the first time somebody's mentioned that. They're intense anywhere, but I can't imagine them in that small kind of space. A lot of people throwing down some music stuff here. ACL 06, somebody mentions. Tom Petty, closing act on Sunday night. Started raining. There you go. And the folks started leaving. We pushed forward. About 30 minutes later, Petty came back on and blew us away. The late, great Tom Petty. Good stuff. This one says, let's see, crowd was insane. What's the event? Best crowd experience? Oh, Texas Houston in 90. Were you there for that one?
No, I wasn't there for that one. No, Kevin has spoken very fondly about that one, obviously.
That's a great one. That is a great moment, man. There were a couple big moments in the state where that Houston team got challenged or maybe beaten, and the fans will always remember that. Somebody says 83, right around 83, Cheap Trick at Nichols State in Thibodaux, Louisiana, senior year of high school. With a prudish classmate hottie on my shoulder, fourth row or so, Rick Nielsen points directly to her during the song She's Tight. Won't ever forget that. There you go. It's those crowd experiences. Big 12 champion against Nebraska. Oh, you were there in 96? That was a good day, too. If you're a Texas fan, Priest Holmes, James Brown, and the crew getting a conference title. What are some of your favorite crowd experiences from over the years? Certainly, if you're headed out to the dish, you would hope there's more crowd experiences coming. If you're a Longhorn fan, you may get to tell somebody later that you were there when Texas got 2 out of 3 from South Florida and went to back to Omaha. We shall see. Saturday night at 8, of course, is the start of Game 1, 7:45 pregame for you right here on the Horn. All right, coming up, it's Where Are We At in Society. Trey has got a story that involves the state of Florida and hanky-panky on the playground. Wonder if the monkey bars are a part of it. We'll find. Are there still monkey bars? We'll find out on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Idea of Heartless Bastards, and it's led us into a couple different directions. Who's this track?
This is more Heartless Bastards. This is a song that our friend Tom was asking for. Skin and Bone.
That's the same woman that was singing the first track?
Yep.
That's good variation.
Mm-hmm.
That's not quite where she was on the other one.
No, she's got a good voice.
Good range there. I thought that was a guy singing right there when it first came in.
She does have that... you call it when it's the homogenous voice,
right?
Yeah,
kind of that. Yeah, that's interesting. Heartless Bastards, another one of those other things I have to check out that I'm just stacking up this music I got to listen to. Thanks to Trey, as always, for finding us a good musical rabbit hole. Thanks to a lot of you for texting in your favorite crowd experiences. Somebody was at Nolan Ryan's fifth no-hitter. Somebody says the chest rumbling at a NASCAR event when the cars go by is an easy one to remember. They're looking forward to that. Again, 85 Michael Jackson in Irving. I worked security and watched the whole crowd crying through the whole show.
Wow.
That was something. And Michael Jackson in his prime had to be amazing. The Texas against Oklahoma State game here in Austin, somebody said it's the loudest crowd they've ever heard in the stadium. That comeback, once it got started, that was a crazy crazy house. I stayed for all that one, too, and that was a heck of an environment. So give us your favorite crowd experiences. We will continue to talk about that. Also, there's even more information on this 12-team playoff idea. They're trying to cover all their bases. We'll tell you one of those details that's being reported today that could be really good news, or maybe is it really bad news? We'll discuss it at 2 o'clock. Right now, it's Where Are We At in Society. Here we go.
Where are we at in society today?
I'm going to say today's Where Are We At in Society is sponsored by the Mullet Open, the reason why I will not be on the show tomorrow, Chad.
There we go.
And we go to Florida for this next story, where last Friday, just after dark, police got called to a playground called Pocahontas Park in Vero Beach. And they had to break up a couple of people who were doing very bad things on a place that's meant for kids to do good things. Jermaine Jackson, 44, and Sharon Finlay, 52, were...
Not the Jermaine Jackson.
Different his Jermaine spelled Jackson. With a G.
Okay, fair enough.
They were found in some playground equipment, frolicking.
Inside the equipment.
Having a sexual tryst.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Monkey bars?
Yes.
Okay.
No, not monkey bars,
not
actually.
Not monkey bars, okay.
Finley told the cops that they were making out. So Finley's the woman. She said that they were making out in a children's crawling tunnel. But then Jackson piped up to the police... Nah, I was eating some...
Oh, come on.
cat.
That is not necessary to say to the cops.
The police report that does include that information goes on to say that Finley was laying on her back, face up, with her jean shorts pulled around her ankles.
Nice.
With her legs spread apart and her lady parts exposed.
Okay, fair enough. And the issue is that that's happening on a playground. But it's the middle of the night, right? You said this is not like...
No, it was 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock at night?
At night.
Okay. Nobody's at the playground?
It's just after dark. There may be some stragglers left around.
Okay.
It's at Florida, after all. You think these kids have curfews?
It is in Florida. It's a fair point.
Cops found 3 alcoholic beverages.
Okay.
1 Four Loko Gold 32-ouncer.
Of course they did.
And a bottle of Gulf Crest vodka.
Wow.
Finley told police, quote, "We were both drinking the Four Loko and the vodka. You only live once."
They really nailed the Florida part of this story, didn't they? That's a hell of a combo.
Oh, man. So my question for you based on this, Chad.
Here we go.
We need to power rank the best and worst equipment to try and make those things happen. Not that specifically, but let's say you wanted to have a tryst,
okay,
with your lovely wife, and I'll play this game with my lovely wife as well.
So we're talking about like now?
Which equipment are you trying to make things happen on, and which equipment are you avoiding altogether?
You're talking about now? Oh, my Lord. Well, I'm avoiding the monkey bars.
Monkey bars is, yes, that's probably worth avoiding.
I'm going to have to avoid the swings.
Swing is number one for me.
No, I don't think so.
You get the easy.
All right, maybe swing.
You get the easy
maybe
rocking action back and forth.
Maybe a swing. So I'd stay away from monkey bars and any kind of replica balance beam kind of thing. And you'll stay away from all that. I don't need any of that stuff.
See, it depends on how you're using the balance beam, I
guess.
Don't
need any
of
that.
And as a matter of fact, you know what? No, I'm going back on the monkey bars. I think the monkey bars do need to be in the power rankings for things that you're willing to try.
No, I'd end up in the hospital. No.
What about a slide? Straight slide and twirly slide do apply.
The twirly slide, again, probably would end up being too much of a dangerous situation.
Twirly slide is too much, I agree.
Regular plastic slide, yes. Metal slide, we'll stay away from that. I don't think metal's going to do much good.
Metal on skin, not good.
Metal on skin can be tough.
Okay. Is there anything else? The little merry-go-round?
Oh, no, that'd be bad for me because I may puke on it everybody. No, we don't want to do that. I can get a little sick on a merry-go-round.
Maybe try and do it, like do some things while it's spinning around, though.
I don't know if that would work. I don't know if that'd be a good thing.
I feel like the dizziness would add to the experience.
Yeah, somebody says avoid the scorching hot metal slide, especially if you are on the bottom. Absolutely. There was the park in town where I grew up. You always knew which slide on a sunny day to stay away from.
Oh, yeah.
The one, you know, the less tree cover, the shade's not there. There was one particular little slide, straight slide, smaller slide, and had an elephant on the side. That thing was 9,000 degrees in the middle of the day. Nobody was ever on it.
They don't even really have those slides anymore. Like, I go to a fair number of playgrounds now with my kids. It's all... The equipment's not all sanitized because there are some things that I'm like, wow, I'm really surprised that in this day and age they have that piece of equipment. That's pretty much made
right
for kids to climb high and then fall off of and crack their head open. But we went to Mo Ranch 2 years ago for July 4th, and on the grounds of Mo Ranch was this playground that must have been there since that place first opened, like in the 1930s.
Sweet.
Because the slides were all metal. There was this really wide slide that wasn't... It wasn't steep and it wasn't long necessarily, but it just abruptly ends.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Like 3 feet before the ground, and you either have to have really good leg strength or just get ready to fall on your ass if you go down that thing. And I only know because I watched like 5 or 6 kids, including my own, break their tailbones doing so.
Yeah, no engineer that created that slide never had kids and never thought about having kids. Like, I have no idea. I know the slide you're talking about. They're horrible.
They didn't have kids, and they probably hated kids too.
Yeah, no, they didn't like children. It was a bad situation. Yeah, the metal slide has kind of gone by the wayside, because although it was the best sliding slide, if you got the right temperature, the metal slide was always superior to me to the plastic slide. It's just that it was always too hot.
No question. And the other thing, too, about modern playgrounds, since I just took us there, we have entirely too many swings now that are like the harness swings.
Oh, yeah.
Where you have to, I mean, you really need help getting in and out, or you have to help the kid in and out, which really sucks for me as an adult who likes to swing.
You're asking for more banana swings?
At a playground.
Is that what you need?
Just the regular seat.
Yeah.
And the chains going up. That's all we need. These kids learn how to swing. We learned how to swing. We didn't have all these fancy swinging contraptions when we were kids.
Yeah, I never had
that. You eventually got to an age where you learned how to swing.
I agree. Yeah, I never thought of that before. I never had the weird swinging cage diaper thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you're right.
Yeah, the rubber diaper. That's what it looks like.
Why do we need that so much? For little bitty kids, I get. But you're
right. For little bitty, yes. But my point is that there's too many of those. There's playgrounds that I go to, Chad, that only have those. Like, what, you're screwing anybody who's over the age of 3 from swinging? Yeah, doesn't seem fair.
Not good. And if you're in Florida, just be careful. 9 o'clock, if you're going to the playground, you might see some things you don't want to see. Especially if you see a Four Loko bottle and then that vodka, that cheap vodka bottle, you're going to want to go the other way.
Next time you and Wendy are walking past a playground around midnight, you really need to reconsider the swing. I know you dismissed it pretty quickly. I think the swing has a ton of potential there.
Wow. All right. I'll have to reconsider that. I have not had that type of thought on a playground in a long time. But I'll let you know. I'll let you know the next time I'm on a playground.
Coming up on Monday, we talk graveyards.
Best place in the graveyard. All right, coming up, they are trying to expand the college football playoff. They've got a couple details, I think, that could cover a couple key bases, including a big argument that I've heard people make. Kevin Dunn from the Triple Option has made it before. I think this would cover that argument and maybe actually make him happy. We'll talk about it on the Horn.